Max, you're gonna have to do it because I'm getting tired.
I'll try and sound like Chaplin, but it's gonna be hard.
This is Bob Stone for Florida Folklife Programs. This is tape number two of Charlie Grote and Cheryl Bellinger, June 21st, 1991, at Charlie's residence in Crystal Beach. So, Charlie, let's go over, if we can, and some of these might be questions that I've asked before. What do you think makes a good auto harp player? Corded zither player.
Thank you. Well, I think the same thing that makes any musician a good musician, a good steady sense of rhythm, good harmonies, well-defined melodies. I think that's pretty true of any instrument that you play. You need to do it well, understand it, how it works and why it works and what makes it sound like you want to sound like, and be dedicated to doing well each time you play.
What are some of the things that come in the later stages of learning how to handle this instrument, how to play it, some of the things that you might recall that occurred to you, that finer points of playing that occurred later in the later stages?
Well, I think there's really three stages of it to my mind. And the first one, this is an extremely easy instrument to get chords out of. So the player starts out learning to play chords, strumming any which way. Then the next step is you learn to strum in certain specific ways to get effects that you want. Then you start to hunt and peck for the melodies. And then at the end, when you're really advanced, you start to understand how to get the melodies, as we've been talking about earlier. And you start to add all the decorations. You heard me working with the wrist motion that she needs to have to make a nice smooth sound out of it. And all those kinds of things. Like any instrument, the little grace notes and decorations and understrums and all that sort of thing.
About tone production, it's easy for me to ask a lot of these questions because I don't know that much about the instrument.
Well,
what kinds of things do you have to consider there to make a nice tone?
Well, first of all, there's a wide variation, as you've already noted, in how the different physical instruments sound. If you're looking for a Cheryl and Ray, for example, have a very sweet harmony in their singing together, and it would be out of place with that harmony to have a loud, bright harp like I have. So she has a harp that's a lot sweeter sounding.
So that's choose the right instrument for the kind of music you're going to play.
That's one of the that's A. Uh-huh. Then another thing, and I don't even know that I've mentioned this to Cheryl at this point, but there are several different metals that the picks are made out of that you can get, and a brass pick
I hand those
will give you a much sweeter tone than a stainless steel pick. I use the stainless steel picks in the bright instrument because I'm a very aggressive player and want hard, bright lead notes. And so that's what I go for. There are some people who use both plastic and felt picks. I don't even use either one. Now
the felt picks
don't fit on your fingers, but just there are people who strum the harp with it. But there's plastic finger picks as well as plastic thumb picks. Sure. Now there are also steel thumb picks,
right. But
they're very awkward and difficult to deal with. And so while I like the tone that they get, I don't use them. Now, another thing that affects your tone is whether or not you buff your picks or not, whether they're sharpened or not. My thumb picks, I sharpen my thumb picks. I may not
so
have mentioned
you
that.
You use a plastic thumb pick
and
stainless steel
finger picks. Right.
Any brand you like?
Yes, Dunlap.
Uh-huh.
Definitely better than the other main
brand.
The other main brand is National. And I like the Dunlops better because the part that grips your finger is shaped better than others, and because they come in gauges, so you can pick your stiffness. Some of them are thinner and springier than others. I like real stiff ones. They're very unforgiving, but you have great control using them, where the springier, thinner ones are very much more forgiving.
I notice you bend them quite a bit.
Right.
You curl them up quite a bit. Is that pretty typical
of
water harp players?
I tell you where I learned that. I learned that from Earl Scruggs, the banjo player, who pointed out to me that his idea of using the picks wasn't so much to create a pick sticking out as just to give the end of his finger a hard surface. Because when you're playing right with the end of your own finger, you have a lot more control of that than you do of something sticking out a little way. And so he suggested this, and before that I was using a pick that came out much more sharp angle, and I started doing just like Scruggs did, and after it was a struggle at first because you don't have any forgiveness there. Mm-hmm. And doing that and having the sharpened end on the... I use a National small thumb pick because they're exactly the right thing.
Oh, yeah, that is pretty pointy.
If you notice, it's knife edge this way, too. Well, this one isn't. It's kind of worn off, but they're supposed to be knife edge that way.
So that gives you...
And it just gives me a tone that I like, you know.
Which is the tone that you get on your harp is pretty bright.
I'm after a bright tone.
It reminds me of an archtop guitar.
Yeah,
that's compared to a dreadnought.
Exactly right. Exactly, it's a
good
comparison.
Through.
That's what I want. See, I'm very seldom would I pick up the auto harp to play background rhythm for somebody unless they wanted that specific tone. I play a variety of other instruments, and I would probably pick another one to do that with. When I pick up the auto harp, it's usually to feature it. So I would select the bright instrument.
I was just thinking it's interesting that Maybelle Carter played an archtop guitar.
Yes, she did.
When a lot of people weren't.
Yes, she did.
So
had an old L5.
Similar.
Yeah.
You know, parallel thing there.
Yeah. You bet. That old lady could pick them, I'm telling you. Now, she had all kinds of auto harps, but she mostly used these old black A mines.
Mm-hmm. And that's a maple?
Maple instrument, yeah.
Even the top is maple?
I think the whole business is maple in those years.
It's a little hard to tell
because
it's black.
Yeah, black paint on them. But, yeah, they were usually maple. There were some that were made out of pine. If you can imagine that. And had a little different tone yet.
Now, is yours laminated or solid
no,
woods?
No, that's solid wood.
It's all solid woods.
I think the back on Cheryl's is a laminated back. But yeah, these are solid wood.
What do you see as the things that the Cheryl needs to keep working on, or you know what? Can you say she's at a certain stage, or
Can
you just talk about that a little bit?
She's advanced from a person who played very little lead to a person who plays a good piece of lead now. And one of the things that I particularly notice and I'm particularly sensitive to is timing. And there needs to be some work yet on that. And another thing is fancy handwork. She's reached a point where she's getting some of it in there, but it's not something she can call on at will at this point.
That's just going to come with time.
She needs to be able to think as she goes along, well, let me put this in and just be able to put it in. But like you say, that's the same as any kind of fancy fiddle work or anything. You just have to work with it. Coming along very well indeed. And with this last segment here, which I saved for last purposefully, the segment that teaches her how to go out and get some more on her own, you know, some tunes, and to continue to go on when I'm not around to say, well, here's what this needs to be like, you know. When she's got that really cooking, then she's got the tools.
So you've given her a basis of theory and understanding chord structure and also the ear training.
Right.
And the physical tools in her hands to do that.
Techniques.
Yeah. Now you practice for the next 30 years and
there you are.
Well, it's the old joke about how to get to Carnegie Hall.
Yeah, yeah.
I better be able to play better in 30 years because I won't be able to sing very well, I'm sure.
Well, I'll tell you, it didn't come to me overnight, that's for sure. Keep looking for that book, folks. I'll write it someday.
Charlie, what I wanted to go over again with you, I know we've done some of it before, is some historical type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's using a broad term. I mean historical in a sense of how you learned, what you've learned along the way on your own, you know, whose paths you've crossed and what you've picked up. But I'd like to start back as far as you can remember.
With this instrument?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so...
Well, the first one of these I ever saw was in my school teacher's room when I went to school, in the elementary school, and I talked to my mother about it, and it was the third grade. And the school teacher had an instrument, and I took an immediate interest in it. And she was actually a pretty good player, too, which is kind of unusual.
And who was it? What was her name?
It was Mrs. Miller.
And this was where?
In Ohio.
What town? I missed that.
In Arcadia.
Oh.
A little town called Arcadia. Yeah. And that lady played. And then I passed a good little while when I just, you know, fooled around with them, strummed them. I didn't own one and as a kid. And so that was kind of difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew some people named the Mundys, a big family named Mundys, and they had one.
M-U-N-D-E?
Good question. No, not Alan Mundy.
No, that's a common spelling.
Yeah. No, I don't know exactly how they did spell that. It could have been that way. But, and so for years and years I played it.
So they had an instrument that you had access to?
And again, played it once in a while, yeah.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't something that was a big interest as a kid.
Uh-huh.
But... for years and years, that's the way that I played it. And I got involved, of course, in lots of folk festivals and so forth as I grew up. But most of my work in music at that time was in country music. And again, it didn't come up on the stage.
Now, this is... Now, where are we in terms of
age? Young adult by now.
Young adult, 20s.
Yeah.
And you were playing what at that time?
Instrumentally?
Yeah.
Piano and guitar, mostly.
Uh-huh. And singing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the auto harp was still
it's something
on the back burner.
Something it knocked around.
Did you own one by
then?
Yeah,
by then. Mm-hmm. Then I got one of those that Sears used to have. Uh-huh. You know, that was your traditional way of getting those. By the way, that's how they got back in the mountains.
Sears.
Was through the Sears mail order catalogs. That's right. They reminded the mountain people of the old time zithers.
Mm-hmm.
When they had those, and they could see that this was something that had more capability, and they started ordering them, and that's how they got back into mines. But then, to go on with this, I got more interested in it as I had chances to see people play who were really good. And Maybelle Carter was one, and Bill Clifton was another back in those times that I heard. And so I started to see what could be done with it, and I started playing around with it. Well, about that time, or about this time, and we're talking about my 30s somewhere, early 30s, I played a lot of bluegrass banjo, and I injured the nerves in one of my fingers, my ring finger on my left hand, and it's never been exactly right since then. But at the time, it was really injured, and I really couldn't rely on it, and I realized that I might have to do music with an instrument that just didn't require that much out of that finger.
Uh-huh.
And so I had got to a point where it was just intensely painful for me to play. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to work on this auto harp more. I could still play piano all right, but not fretted instruments at that time. And so that's when I started to really take the instrument down and start to make a study of it. And I got excited with it as I started to see what could really be done. This system that I've been teaching Cheryl of intervals and their identification with scale tones is something that I invented. I'm sure that I'm not the only person who has invented that, but I worked it out for myself and came to understand it for myself because I saw that if I had that system, then I was going to be able to do a lot more with it.
Let me see. Well, why don't you, rather than me try and say it, could you say it again? Could you summarize it? What you do to find?
Okay.
And basically, we're talking about finding a harmonized melody note.
Right. Finding the melody note by using the chord bar that will make that melody note, will allow that melody note to be played, and with which the harmony notes that you're playing will most closely match the backup, whatever that might be. And there's a system for determining which scale intervals are associated with which chord bars up and down the scale. And then once you have that, there are some alternatives for most of the notes too, and you need to see first of all, obviously, is the standard choice the right one, and then if it's not, then go through a couple of different ways of finding the alternate that might work. But
and then
that's basic.
You ultimately determine it by your ear. You know, you have this way of looking at it to know what the possibilities are. But that and
understanding. For example, if I have a situation where I need an F note, and my backup chord is C, and my choices then are the F chord bar or the G7 chord bar to get that F, and I have to know that the seventh of G is F, or I won't know that the G7 chord bar contains that.
Right.
You know. And as it happens in that particular circumstance, the G7 chord bar is a better choice than the F. F is obvious. Everyone knows that the F chord bar contains F, or you would think they would, because it's called F. Mm-hmm. But if you don't know those other things, then you're limited and unable to find that. That's why I don't think the hunt and peck system is nearly as good as the knowledge system.
Uh-huh.
It's a matter of becoming very conversant with chord theory.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there you were in your 30s.
Yeah, and I got
somewhere you figured out this system. You had a finger that was giving you trouble, so you
started really playing the instrument, and then I started to, my wife at the time and I were playing in a duo in lots of festivals around the country, and I also played in several different band configurations in folk music area, and I started to feature it then. When I realized what it could do, I started to feature it, and it took a greater and greater place in my folk music shows. Now, I did use it sometimes in the country bands for fun, and we'd play Wildwood Flower, and we'd play Under the Double Eagle, and things like that.
Now, by that time, Mother Maybell, Carter family was pretty popular.
I'd seen her a number of times.
Their music was pretty well known.
Oh, yeah. Well, long before that. You know, they've been known for a long time. But I had seen Maybelle Carter play a number of times and watched how she did.
Who was the other person you mentioned?
Well, Bill Clifton. And the reason that he was influential on me was that I was very into bluegrass then. I still love bluegrass and still play it.
Mm-hmm.
Bill was a fellow who played excellent auto harp and was a bluegrass player. And he played with Red Rector and he played with a number of other groups. And
did he play something other than the auto harp too?
Yeah, yeah. He played guitar and let's see what else. I think he might have been a banjo player too. Not quite sure. But at any rate, he went to live for a long time in England and we didn't hear much of him over here. But then he came back and, you know, he started to be heard more and more, and I remember one particular tune he did called Mary Dear that had a real nice auto harp part, and I thought, boy, this is really neat. And so I started featuring the instrument more. And then I had a time in my life when I started playing some much bigger situations and festival situations and got on some big shows. And I worked out Grandfather's Clock on the auto harp in a hot version, an up-tempo version. And I think it's become a standard now. Everybody and his brother Harold plays it on the auto harp. But I think and believe that I was the first person to work that up. I never heard it before. I never heard anyone do it on the auto harp.
About what year would this been, more or less?
You would ask. Something in the rough neighborhood of 20 years ago. 70s sometime when I worked that up. And, I'd never heard anyone else doing that, too.
Where were you living at this time?
I was living, between California and New Mexico then. I think I was still in New Mexico at that time. And Ohio. We spent some time in Ohio, too. But I spent a lot of time on the move. My home used to be my old hat. But, New Mexico was where that was. And let's see.
When did the new wave, I hate to use that kind of phrase, but, you know, when did these, the hot stuff auto harp players start appearing? Do you remember that?
Well, if I say something that'll be way off, it seems to me like it's been about 10, 12, 15 years. I know that 20 years ago when I played the instrument, I had to explain what it was every time I played it. And in fact, we had to explain what it was so often that I even had a comedy routine worked up that along with explaining it, you know. You know, you've seen these drummers that advertise the food slicers that chops and slops and dices, and we had a whole thing worked up. Now there's, you know, everyone knows what that instrument is, and it's all kinds of players. There was a fellow named Brian Bowers who came along, who's still around. I just heard him up in North Carolina a little while back, who I was the first person I heard doing the fiddle tune type thing on the auto harp. And he played it pretty much traditionally as far as his methods, but fiddle tunes hadn't been a part of it before, I don't think, and he set off a big wave of interest in it.
And he was, probably late 70s when he
started doing that? Yeah, something like that, probably. I may be off on that. I've got some of his albums over there. There's a guy named Gove Scrivener, who just as a point of interest, is from the Tampa area around here, who went out and was kind of a protege of and worked with Doc Watson and played hot auto harp, and he's also excellent. And then there's just been a whole bunch of them since then. And probably our leading person here in Florida of that style would be Mark Faculty, if not Marty Schumann. Billy Garrison is an excellent player, but he plays more in the traditional modes, and more like I do than like they do.
Is there still I know Marty won some kind of world championship or something. Where is that?
The international championship is out at Winfield, Kansas.
Is that still going on?
Sure is.
Is that kind of the?
That's the top.
The championship.
As far as championships, I'm not an enterer of contests, but if I were, that's the one I would enter.
Yeah, I know. I understand that what you play is a different thing, and it's not.
It's a different thing. I'm not saying it couldn't win though. If it's well done. I think it's the excellence of playing as opposed to a certain genre of music, a certain bag of tricks, so to speak. But if I were interested, that's where I'd go. And, of course, Mark Faculty's not only won that, but he won a United States championship, too, which is out in California. So there's two guys right here in the local area who are among the best at that in the world. They're pushing the envelope, and that's great. You know, they're out there trying to see what they can do with the thing, and But they've got them all souped up and rigged up and chord bars modified and all that sort of thing. And mine is exactly the same as it today as it was the day I got it at a garage sale. I haven't changed it at all.
And it's basically the same. It's the traditional style.
It's exactly the same as it was when it was made. Black A model. I slipped the chord bars down so I'd have a little more room to strum, and that's the only.
When did they first appear in any quantity? Like
back. Well, it's interesting to tell you that there is a great dispute over the exact history of it, and it's been accepted for a long time that a fellow named Charles Zimmerman pretty much invented the instrument and marketed it back in the 1880s. But it's now been shown, and there's a recent article in the Auto Harp Quarterly, I think by Ivan Stiles, it's been shown that the design that we have now for the corded zither was in fact made by somebody else, and that the design that Charles Zimmerman had was very, very different from that and not a bit practical and never caught on at all. But Zimmerman lifted and marketed the better design by the other fellow. I can't think of the other fellow's name now. I think I've got that magazine in the other room somewhere. But so, there's quite a little dispute, but in general, a little over 100 years ago is when it all started, when someone, Zimmerman or the other person, I think his name might have been Gotzmer, something like that, decided that there should be a way to get more out of the zither than they were able to do without the chord bar assembly.
What's the rough range of your instrument? Now, this is a 10 chord bar.
12.
How many strings does it have?
36. And it has two octaves and then a bass range. There's a two octave range of that's chromatic, and then there's a bass range which includes bass strings that work with the best with the different selection of chords.
So two chromatic octaves, and how big is the bass range? Is it
well? It's about.
If it's got 36 strings, I guess it's about another.
It's about another 8 or 10 strings, but it's.
Another dozen strings.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily another octave, though.
Right. It's not full.
Been worked out what strings would be the best to have down there
right.
for the various chord setups.
What keys is your instrument more or less capable of?
Well, it's most versatile in G and C and F. You can play in a couple of other keys, but you have to stick with simple stuff because your versatility is limited. It's an instrument that I strongly favor the chromatic instrument over the diatonic instrument. Diatonic instruments are made to play in just one or two keys.
And that's the ones that some of these newer style players are playing today.
Uh-huh. And my solution is simply to have several harps with little different tunings, you know, to get the different things. You can get them with up to 21 chord bars, but then you're sacrificing a lot of playing room up at the top.
Up on the shorter strings.
Yeah.
Let's see. As far as the things you do with your right hand, what are some of those things?
Oh, gee, there's a specific question.
Well, I know enough to know that there's pinching and strumming.
Yeah. Pinching and strumming are the two basic things from which all the rest of it springs.
Now, do you only, when you pinch, is it strictly two strings, or do you
pinch more? No. You can pinch all the way from just one string by pinching what they call a cross pinching on the same string.
Same string.
How
many finger picks do you use?
I use two.
Two finger picks and the thumb pick.
Right. Uh-huh. Right. The middle finger of the hand normally carries the melody. And then I keep another one because sometimes I like to reach in and get.
So the middle finger of.
The middle finger, it carries the melody. And the thumb, of course, is the way the pinch works. You're pinching the lead note at the top, and then as you come down, you're pinching a couple of harmony strings, and then coming up here, of course, you're pinching string. But then, in addition to that, I like to have this just for fast trilling and stuff.
Your index finger.
Yeah, and for reaching.
It's hard to see this on the recording.
Yeah, that's right. Can I show it here on the little thing? But, yeah.
And then, of course, there's a lot you can do with strumming.
Oh, yeah. Lots of different techniques. There's rolls and pinches of all kinds. And
you were talking a little bit with Cheryl today about banjo rolls.
Yeah, that's coming up. And well, what it is very, something, if anybody who plays the bluegrass banjo knows that the forward roll. And this particular action is very much like the forward roll.
And that's the forward roll is what's the sequence? And
well, you'd be it's 1-2 thumb.
1-2 thumb. Yeah. So index, second.
This thumb. Way, 1-2 thumb, 1-2 thumb, 1-2 thumb, 1-2 thumb is the forward roll.
What's the backward roll?
And 2-1 thumb. Mm-hmm. Really, it is mm-hmm. exactly. And the banjo roll, again, that's another thing that I invented, I'm sure, along with lots of other people, as a use in it. I didn't hear about it from someone else, but later, of course, other people were doing it, and I'm sure they came to that conclusion on their own. But being a banjo player, mm-hmm. it was easy for me to mm-hmm. say, why don't I do this? And it's useful for trilling. If you're playing some real fast melody with a lot of open playing, now, open playing is a technique where you reach in without a chord bar and get a note. And that takes a certain amount of skill.
Because if you miss,
you blew it. Yeah. So you want to be pretty slick.
And why would you do that? Is that because some particular chord bar wouldn't be of that much help for that?
That's one thing you might do if you just didn't have a chord bar that would do it. There's the note, but you got nothing that you can get it with that's any good. Uh-huh. You do that. And another situation where that happens, and this is where the push really comes to shove, as I was showing Cheryl with Red Wing earlier, where you're going so fast and making changes so fast that there simply is not time to get the mm-hmm. other chord bar and get back. And then you've got to just say to yourself, I'm just going to reach in and pick that note.
And it's basically a single note.
Yeah, single notes. And, of course, as you say, if you miss them, the next one doesn't fit. So, you know, the ones on either side of it are probably very wrong. So
you have to be precise.
So you've got to be pretty precise
to get there. And you've got to do that with your thumb or one of your fingers?
No, with your finger. With your second finger.
With your second
finger. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds real bad if you miss. As I have done, you know, and everybody has,
sure.
One time or another, usually before a large audience.
Gosh, I just lost my train of thought.
Well, we were talking about right hand techniques.
Yeah, strums. As you were teaching Cheryl, I forget what tune it was, but you talked about some octaves. So sometimes right. you pinch octaves.
Right. Well, there's a technique that's sort of like a pinch, but it really isn't, because a pinch implies that you're coming together. And this would be sort of a pluck where you, and again, I'm making motions at the tape recorder, but you reach in and pluck two strings like that rather than, and again, that's no good because I can't. How am I going to describe this? Well, say you had two strings you wanted to get, and they were both D's,
mm-hmm.
an octave apart. Well, you'd reach in there with your middle finger and your thumb and get the bass D with your, or the lower D with your thumb, and the other D with your middle finger, and you just pluck straight out as opposed to pinching your hand together.
Hmm.
And that
makes
that
a different
way,
kind of sound.
And, well, not so much that, but you don't get anything but those two sounds together, and it makes a nice octave sound.
So when you're doing,
if you're running along playing a melody and you want something to have that fat, nice sound of two notes together,
right.
that are an octave apart, then that's where you go.
So what you're calling a pinch, you actually get notes other than.
Well, I wouldn't really call that thing a pinch. I'd call that a.
Calling a pinch.
Right. Then you get harmony notes in there with your. See, when you pinch together, you're getting not only your lead note up here, but your harmony notes with your thumb when you pinch. And you probably get usually one or two harmony notes with the lead finger, too. After the lead note has sounded, you're probably, not always, but sometimes you're brushing a couple of notes there as your thumb comes up. It's kind of like.
So when you say pinch, it has a little bit different. A guitar player might use the term pinch. A finger picker might use that term to mean more of what you're doing with the octave.
That's
you get
right.
two notes at once.
That's exactly
and just
right.
Just those two notes.
Yeah, that's
or,
exactly
you know,
true.
Really
yeah,
the,
I also finger pick guitar.
Simultaneously.
So that's
yeah.
exactly
but,
right.
But when you pinch the auto harp, you're actually in the process of bringing your one and two fingers closer to your thumb. You're bringing every. You're getting.
Mm-hmm. And your thumb and your thumb closer to
right.
the fingers
and you bring
too.
Bring them all together.
Right.
As we right. can see on the tape recorder here.
Yeah, yeah. We keep motioning, don't we, at the microphones.
Next year's apprentice program will be videotaped.
Let's hope so. That'd be even more helpful than these audio tapes.
Yeah, that may be coming. Well, I think we've covered a lot here. Is there anything? You see on the horizon for yourself. What do you plan on doing with your auto harp playing as far as development, you know, musical developments for yourself? You've been playing for probably 30 years
long
or so.
Well, as we said earlier, there's just no end to music, and we keep on going all the time. And to tell you the truth, this master apprenticeship program has kind of inspired me to develop some more things. I want to do some not necessarily fast, but certainly greatly challenging pieces of music on the instrument that don't depart from the traditional modes.
Can you give me an example?
Well, to tell you the truth, this listen to the Mockingbird and Red Wing medley that I'm working on is mm-hmm. just such a thing, exactly. I just started working on that.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something I've played much in the past.
Uh-huh.
But it's just extremely challenging
uh-huh.
and complicated and difficult and possible, and I'm going to do it. And so I want to get it so it's nice and smooth. I have seen enough interest in all this through this program that I'm going to go ahead. For years I've been talking about making an auto harp album, and I've decided to go ahead and do that. And so we'll have an album out with the auto harp spotlight. Mm-hmm. I should say corded zither. You got me saying auto harp. Auto harp is a brand name, and that should be remembered. And while it's a good brand and one of the leading ones, it's by no means alone. So that's where I'm heading.
Okay, well, I think we'll wrap it up here.
Yeah. I want to put on this tape before you turn it off that I think that this program is a particularly good thing for the government of Florida to be doing, and that... you know, government is supposed to exist for the betterment of the governed, and I think this certainly is for the betterment of all of us that we have this program.
Great. Thanks, Charlie.